Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:15 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is October 6th. Well, I thought we'd kick off today and just look at some of these cannabis stocks right before the close. So I was unfortunately unable to put in any orders myself. I fully intend to buy some of these stocks and probably the ETF as well tomorrow, but what we're looking at and is that there's a catalytic event. President Biden has just issued a pardon for anyone who's in federal prison with a conviction for cannabis, and he's implying or he's exhorting the governors of various states to follow him in that lead. The reality is that there are people and a large number of people in prison who would probably not be in prison today, but they are because they were transgressing the law before legalization in a number of states. So that's a significant issue. Now, where it's going to bump up against some regulation is that there are going to be states where people are imprisoned and cannabis is still illegal. But he is now also looking at potentially legalizing it because at present, cannabis has a Schedule 1 designation, which puts it in the same category as heroin. And that's obviously a very serious transgression. So then, if they reclassify it, then it opens up the retail sector. And this is a logarithmic scale chart. When we just zoom out a little and look at more back history, we can see that there was a lot of enthusiasm about cannabis back in 2018 and 19, especially, and maybe if we look at one of the ones that have been around for longer, like Canopy Growth Corp, we've had multiple occasions when prices did exceptionally well. So there was first the big pop on the upside in 2018. During the pandemic, it also did well. But since then, we've seen prices come back down to where they were before any income was ever received. So, Canopy Growth Corp is up about 10% in here today. I didn't mean to put up the dividend. But then we can just think about the fact that they do have revenues. And those revenues have been growing. Now, year to date, they're not quite where they were in 2020, 2021. But that doesn't mean that they can't continue to grow. So we're in an interesting situation. Now, a lot of these companies have got great difficulty with banking, and they're very cash-based, and they can't get access to payments systems. So that's a real limitation on growth. And if they get legalization, there's the real potential for a significant recovery. This is a sector that tends to be prone to exaggerated moves. So it's certainly something to keep an eye on. It's not like I don't feel conflicted about it. Because I remember a decade ago, I was really in favor of electronic cigarettes because I thought that it would be a useful tool to help to wean people off of cigarette use. And what it turned out instead to be was a massive commercial opportunity for electric cigarette manufacturers to hook a whole new generation of people to nicotine. So, that really didn't work out well, and it has led to an increase in youth smoking. So, I think going into this with eyes wide open, that there is a very significant potential that consumption of CBD products is going to increase and do so significantly. Then it does have knock-on effects. So, let's just think about a company like Brown-Forman. One of the biggest arguments that the cannabis sector has is that when people are on cannabis, they're not inclined towards violence. And of course, we can't say the same thing about alcohol. If people are spending more of their leisure time taking CBD, they may be taking less alcohol. And companies like Brown-Forman have done nothing but rise for years. And it's a dividend aristocrat as well. So the share is now coming back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Diageo is obviously another dividend aristocrat, or S&P Europe 350 dividend aristocrat, and the share is also back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So it would be, I think, premature to think that these types of companies are going to run into significant trouble, but it can't be ruled out either. When the cannabis sector reaches scale, then they're going to be competing for money spent on alcohol, and I think that's certainly something to pay attention to. Now, when we also think about the big move that we've had, well, then this is also something that's worth highlighting. Geo Group is a private prison provider. Now, the share does have support characteristics, but if they're going to release a large number of people from prison, that means less customers. And this is, I think, something else that people should pay attention to, that these reliable cash flows in one sector will be affected. This is another prison stock, CoreCivic. So this also brings out the additional point about disruption. And we are at a significant point of disruption because we can definitely think about new sectors coming to the fore. We can think about how the growth and fulfilling of potential in a new sector will have knock-on effects in existing sectors. But one of the most engaging trends of the last 40 years has been bonds, and bond yields are rising, and that means that prices are falling. There was a lot of speculation on Monday about whether the 10-year yield was going to break down through the 3.5% level. And it needed to bounce, and it has bounced, and it followed through on the upside again in here today. And then we can think about the dollar. It hasn't been this strong for a lengthy period of time. It was up almost a full point in here today. And this is a clear bounce from the 110 area. So it is also premature to think that the dollar's strength has in fact ended. So we're looking increasingly likely to have a 75 basis point hike before, or excuse me, in November, and potentially more by the end of the year. So when we think then about the stock market, well, the Nasdaq is now in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and it's rolling over a little bit in here today, having bounced pretty impressively for 2 days. This is the first time in 12 years that the index has been below the 1,000-day moving average, and we have a clear succession of lower rally highs and lower lows. So this is a downtrend. The 11,000 level absolutely needs to hold if this bear market isn't going to turn into a complete break of the secular bull. So we're in a very delicate environment overall, and a lot of the pressure is going to come to bear on the largest companies, because if we think about the causal factors behind the significant bull we've had since 2009, it's been about the companies that made the best use of 4G cloud computing and access to abundant free liquidity. So if we look at the Fangman plus Tesla companies and relative to the NYSE, well, their outperformance ended a year ago, and we're now down from about 23% of the market to 20% of the market, but it is rolling over. And therefore, we have to be prepared for the potential that the largest companies in the world are going to act as lead weights on the wider market. That doesn't mean that we're going to have every company declining. If we look at the advanced decline line for the NYSE, it's trending downwards. There's absolutely no question of that. But it hasn't broken through the 1,000-day moving average yet. So this has generally been one of the most reliable barometers of a secular trend, and it has been going up for a prolonged period. It pushed back above the 1,000-day moving average in 2009. So if it breaks down, then that's going to also lend a great deal of credence to the belief that the secular trend is over. So then we need to be much more selective about what kind of opportunities arise. There will have to be clear catalysts to support them. And on aggregate, most of the tech sector isn't going to do nearly as well as they have done. Because there was a good few years, particularly from about 2016 to 2021, 22, when all you had to do was invest in any kind of tech company and it did fine. And the ARK Innovation ETF is a great example of that. It was really nothing at all back in 2016. It did very well in 2017, and then it did spectacularly well in 2020. And now the ETF is barely steady in the region of the lows from earlier this year, and its biggest holding is Tesla. And Tesla is still has a sequence of lower rally highs, and it is just about holding on in the region of the lows from earlier this year. But a significant number of the less successful electric vehicle companies are trending down. So Lucid Group, which has the longest range car, but also one of the most expensive, is right in the region of its lows. And NIO, which is one of the leading Chinese companies, but not really in a strong revenue position, is also trending downwards. And BYD, I can put that up in Hong Kong. That had been one of the better performers overall. But the Hong Kong market is not looking strong. And it has pulled back into the region of the sequence of higher reaction lows and was in negative territory in here today. Now, of course, the strength of the dollar, rising interest rates, and reduced money supply growth are weighing on stock markets everywhere. So the Hang Seng is back in the region of the lows from back in 2011, and it's attempting to steady, but not in an especially convincing manner, really, just yet. I'm just going to throw up a 10-year chart to compare some of these. Now, when we think about Australia, we've had two good big upward dynamics in a row, so that's starting to look more convincing. And of course, Australia is benefiting from exports of iron ore and gas, wheat, and other commodities. But the RBA is still going to be raising rates, and the property sector is under duress. So we're also looking at the potential for additional Australian dollar weakness. And it's really just barely steady here around the 64 level. What we've also seen is that the yen closed out today above 145. So this is the dollar breaking higher. Now we had that big move about 2 weeks ago when the government of Japan intervened to slow the yen's decline, but with no participation from the BOJ. So now the market is testing the government's resolve to continue to support to defend this 145 level. And the euro also continues to look susceptible to additional downside. This is still a consistent downtrend. We have a very clear sequence of lower rally highs. And the pound, having really had a storming rally over the last 10 sessions, was down in a dynamic manner in here today. So it has not broken the sequence of lower rally highs and simply unwound the short-term overbought condition. If the lows are in, then the 105 area will hold and we'll get a higher reaction low. But we will need to see that higher reaction low in order to confirm that the lows are in. And then it's worth just reminding ourselves that we had extraordinary volatility last week in UK gilts. And that was concentrated in the 30-year. So we had this huge downward dynamic. Now it looks likely that the market is going to test the resolve of the Bank of England and force yields back up towards the 4.5% to 5% level and see whether the Bank of England will start buying them again. After that, yields can compress. But usually, after a big move like this, the market will test the resolve of the central bank and we'll need to see fire and brimstone rained upon the shorts in order to really confirm that 5% is going to be defended. So, when we think about where are we, one thing that I find especially interesting is that when we think about the bear market so far, the S&P 500 is right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average and is trying to steady. And it's really badly in need of a bullish catalyst, and it doesn't look like we're going to get one. And earnings haven't even begun to roll over yet. We are heading into the earnings season for the third quarter. So we will have an answer to some of those earnings questions in the not so distant future. But a lot of people are thinking that the decline has gone far enough, and I think that's a very tempting conclusion. But the PE right now is around 17, but earnings haven't rolled over yet. So there is obviously the potential that the valuation would go up if valuations decline, or excuse me, the valuation would go up if earnings decline. And there's the potential then that the price will pull back further and we will see it back below the 1,000-day moving average. And that will be a major trend inconsistency. It was already a major trend inconsistency in 2020. And then we had the, and I guess this is one of the most important points here, that you often see a big trend losing consistency at the penultimate high. And now there is obviously an 18-month differential between those, but that was the first big inconsistency. Then the acceleration was another loss of uptrend consistency and a bigger decline. So there's nothing that's still consistent about this chart. And I've seen some people talking about potentially seeing the index come back into the 3,400 level, others talking about 3,000. Well, personally, I think 3,000 is probably the base case. That's give or take around where prices were before the splurge in tandem with the pandemic. The question thereafter will be, how quickly will the Federal Reserve start to cut rates after they do pivot? That's perhaps the biggest question. And we do have an analog from the 1970s that's reasonably similar in that they raised rates aggressively in the 1970s. And then they cut them immediately afterwards. So I think that's something that is particularly relevant. In 1974, they hiked rates by over 4%. And of course, we had the oil crisis in 1973. So to get in control of inflation, they hiked rates. By the middle of the year, they were cutting them. And in 75, they cut rates a bit, and in 76, they cut them even more. But then they started raising rates. And the impetus to cut rates sowed the seeds for stagflation. Well, it was stagflation, and inflation never really came down. But then, because interest rates came down, it created the wage price spiral. And then they had to really aggressively raise rates all the way through until 1980. And the nominal rate got up to 20%. So then the question is, the Fed is talking tough. Nobody really believes that they're going to raise rates indefinitely. And that is a problem for the Federal Reserve, because when people don't believe the guidance, then they're falling down on their job. Their ability to talk the market into the direction that they want is at least half of the success of central bank policy. But in order for that to work, you have to be credible. So we have had decades of time when they haven't been credible, and every sign of trouble, they've cut rates. And we're not yet at a point where unemployment is rising. So until that happens, the Federal Reserve can basically do whatever they want, because they only have two mandates. The first is to control prices, and the second is unemployment. Well, they don't have a problem with unemployment, and they have a problem with prices, so they'll do whatever it takes to deal with the prices problem. It's only when the other side of the mandate becomes problematic that they're going to start becoming a more accommodative. So we're not there yet. We might not be there until the beginning of next year. But if inflationary pressures are resilient because of supply issues, there's certainly the argument that by reducing money supply, and money supply growth has been falling internationally, then that will hit demand, but it's not going to fix supply. So if those supply issues remain problematic, well, then inflation will not come all the way back down. And when monetary policy is made easier, then it'll raise its head again. And I think that's perhaps the most likely scenario. It could be a full redux of what we saw in the 1970s. So we're still in a corrective environment overall, and as long as yields on the dollar are trending higher, stocks are going to remain under pressure, and there will be idiosyncratic bull markets, and they'll be very catalyst driven. So cannabis is probably one of those in the short term. I think that I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.